yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today the topic is, will the Trump trade fade? Okay, what do we mean by the Trump trade? And what do we mean by fade? What's the Trump trade? Well, the Trump trade is a general term used in the press nowadays in recent weeks and months to reflect the anticipation of business investors that Trump is going to stimulate the economy. So in anticipation of that, the stock market has ratcheted up to another bubble level. We've talked about why there's a bubble in the stock market. Well, Trump has just pushed it one step further here. Kind of reminds me a little bit like the housing boom. You know, in the previous decade, it got overheated and ran its normal length here between 1997 and 2002-03, and then they gave it another false boost further. They, meaning then Greenspan, Alan Greenspan, the Fed chair, and George W. Bush, gave it another false boost and took it even to greater heights between 2003 and 2006, lowered interest rates to 1%, and artificially stimulated the housing market and deregulated it to enable it to happen and got a little more boost out of it. But, of course, we know the consequences of overinflating housing prices, and it led to the crash in 2008. Okay, well, it seems a little bit like that. There's a parallel here, I think, going on, and that is we got this artificial last leg boost of the stock market. And we're really in bubble territory now, and I'll explain why. Okay. Well, why do we get the boost in stocks? Because the stock market and investors are anticipating that there's going to be even more profit subsidization going on by the Trump administration. And I'll explain what I mean and why it's a subsidization of profits. All right. Okay. So we're in 21,000 Dow market territory. From, well, just less than 18,000 on the Dow before Trump had his surprise victory here, right? And now, so that's like 3,000 points. Well, up there, almost, well, certainly 15% run-up, further run-up in the Dow in just a matter of a couple months. And, of course, the other stock, major stock indexes, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, the other two major, they're rising in tandem here, right? So all of them are going up, right? What it reflects is investors anticipating more profits for businesses. You know, if you look at the last 8 years, where did we get such record profits? You know, profits, after-tax profits, more than doubled here in the U.S. And, of course, corporations were able to nicely pass through all those profits to their shareholders and big dividend cuts and stock buybacks that drove the market even further. Dividends and stock buybacks returned over $5 trillion between 2009 and 15. We don't have figures for 16 yet. Over $5 trillion to stockholders and shareholders. Nice piece of change. And because of the big tax cuts under Bush and Obama, investors got to keep most of that. And that explains why you got this obscene 1% of the wealthiest households, which are all investors, 1%, the 1% gets 95% of all the income gains. Well, it's because of this big boom in stock and other markets, other financial markets. And the pass-through of all of that by corporations to their shareholders. And they get to keep most of it because of the tax cuts for investors. I'll talk about the dimensions of that a little bit shortly. Okay, so that's how we got such big profit gains here, subsidizing corporations through super low interest rates, super low for almost 8 years. Federal Reserve, monetary policy was the culprit here, and monetary policy combined with tax cuts. Right. Monetary policy, of course, reduced the cost of borrowing to almost zero, well, very low, zero for banks, and they just passed it through very low rates for non-bank companies. So, you know, they passed that through and lowered business costs tremendously. At the same time, the very low rates caused the boom in the stock market and other markets. And corporations added to their profits from what's called portfolio investment, investing in stocks and bonds and other securities, derivatives, and so forth, right? Large companies today, at least 30% or more of their total profits is from what's called portfolio investments, in other words, financial asset investments, not from making things or services and selling them to the public, but just speculating, you know, and getting capital gains on the market boom, markets booming, financial markets booming. And then, of course, capital gains are taxed far less than other earned income, so they get to keep all that. So it's the low cost, the profit margins that were driving the corporate profits and the portfolio investments driving the corporate profits. And both of those were driven, of course, by the very, very low rates. So the Federal Reserve, central bank, was really the driver of the corporate profit boom, and then that and the tax cuts for the rich got most of the profits transferred to the wealthy 1%, the investors. That's how the game worked, you see. It was profit margins, not profits from selling more things, but profits from cutting costs. The cost of borrowing and the stimulation of the stock and bond and other markets. And, of course, we saw during the last 8 years costs being reduced and benefiting profit margins in the area of wages. You know, we got no real wage gains here going on for 8 years. Oh, they're talking about, oh, wages are rising, but, you know, the average is rising because the very top may be rising, and that includes salaries of professionals and middle managers and high-level managers and so forth, right? So that's what's driving it. At the median, wages aren't rising. And below that, of course, they were falling. And a lot of the cost-cutting on the wage side was a result of the transformation going on in the labor markets. In other words, most of the jobs created were part-time temp, or what we call contingent jobs, independent contract jobs, and gig economy jobs. So that explains to a great deal why wages have been stagnant or declining. The lower your income level, the more likely you're going to be in one of those very low-wage job categories. The whole period from 2008 on saw wage compression going on, big savings, cost savings for companies, right? Big tax cuts, i.e. cost savings for companies, and very low interest rates, cost savings for companies, and with the added advantage of driving up stocks. And companies able to not only get cheap loans, cost savings again, but able to issue corporate bonds, a form of borrowing, and fatten up their balance sheets by borrowing issuing corporate bonds, you know, over $5 trillion in corporate bond issues in the U.S. just over this period because it's so cheap. You know, you just issue bonds and then take the money and distribute it to your stock shareholders. That's what's going on. You don't use the borrowing, the bond issues to stimulate expansion and growth and therefore revenues and hiring people. No, no. You just use it to pass through. Right? These are all explanations why we didn't get a real expansion of the economy, real robust investment, what we call real asset investment in the economy since 2008. If you don't get real investment, you know, in things, making things, a lot of the real investment went offshore. You know, Apple expanded its production in China instead of here, while it borrowed hundreds of billions of dollars, while it still had hundreds of over $200 billion in cash. You see, that's what's going on here. It's not that companies are borrowing to invest, to expand, to hire people, to make things. No, that's not the way it works anymore. Right? They borrow to give windfalls and dividends and stock buybacks to their shareholders. And to the extent they actually invest in things, they do it offshore. And so you don't get any real growth and therefore any real wage increases going on here in the U.S., but you get big profit margin growth and a doubling of 2.5 times of corporate profit growth, right? And shareholders like that, and it bids up the stock. Well, that's what happened for the previous 8 years, but that kind of ran its course, you see. Cost reduction, interest rate, wage reduction-driven profit margins, kind of led by the central bank monetary policy, it kind of run its course. You know, capitalist investors knew that there was they had squeezed that lemon as much as they could. So now, you know, how are we going to squeeze another lemon here was the problem in 2016, and more interest began to grow in what's called, fiscal stimulus here. We need more fiscal stimulus. We need more infrastructure spending. That's one form of stimulus. We need to boost defense spending, another form of stimulus. Right. And we need to cut taxes, another form of stimulus. You know, tax cuts and government spending is fiscal stimulus. So interest began growing, not just in the U.S., but elsewhere in Europe, so forth, about, capitalists need to shift their strategy to the fiscal side. You know, we squeeze that monetary central bank a low interest rate approach as much as we can, and you know, started leading to problems here, contradictions, right? And what were the contradictions of that monetary policy of the previous 8 years? Well, it drove interest rates down so low that they turned negative. Real interest rates in the U.S. turned negative. Real meaning interest rates adjusted for inflation. But in Europe and Japan, not only rates adjusted for inflation, but on all kinds of bonds, nominal rates, in other words, the market rates were off already as well in zero territory. Well, what happens when rates are zero? Well, the idea was if it would cost companies money to put their money in the banks, they would rather invest it. You know, that was the nonsense theory behind it. Well, they didn't do that, right? They just gave the money back to their shareholders instead of investing it. And what you got was a slowing of real investment, in other words, in making things and in the capital, fixed capital necessary to make things. You had a slowing of that and therefore a collapse of productivity, which we saw going on, which only raised unit labor costs and therefore raise costs. So what happened was the whole rate reduction idea to reduce costs by reducing rates was actually slowing investment productivity and raising costs. So, we squeeze this thing. Negative rates are a sign that we can't go any further, right? And of course, also the contradiction of the contradiction with that whole central bank approach, monetary approach, was that it had boosted stock and bond prices so much that it had created a bubble in stock and bonds, and bubbles mean huge profits, portfolio investments, and corporations and investors, you know, kept plowing the money back into the stock and bond markets and credit markets because there's so much profitable more than investing in making real things. So that was another force that kept real investment stagnating. You know, normally you would have 10 to 15% of GDP in real investment. Real investment meaning, you know, building structures and equipment and so forth. But that real investment had declined by 2016 into the low single digits in the U.S. So that was another factor, slowing down real investment in the real economy as well. So, you know, these low rates just promoted financialization and profits through financial asset investing. And at the same time, as a result, discourage real investing that creates real jobs and real income, real wages for people, right? Also, the very low interest rates were encouraging central banks around the world to drive their currency exchange rates even lower by engaging in what was called quantitative easing. Quantitative easing is just pumping money into the economy to lower your currency values, a kind of competitive devaluation, right, to get an advantage over your competitors in global trade. For a while, Germany was good at that. Right? Germany's very good at that. But that had the effect of slowing global trade as well. Global trade now is growing slower than global GDP, which is also falling, slowing down. Right? And this is the first time in records kept in the modern period that the volume of global trade was growing even slower than global GDP, which meant that the export driven strategy for domestic economic growth was no longer working very well. Okay, so all of these are kind of blowback for this very low interest rate approach that characterized the previous 8 years up until the recent elections, right? It delivered tremendous profits from cost reduction and financial market stimulation for corporations, and the corporations then just passed through most of this to their big shareholders in dividends and stock buybacks. So, you know, that was the game. That was the game being played for 8 years, and it kind of started developing conditions that were contradictory to the whole strategy here. So they started talking last year, well, we got to move to something else, and something else, of course, is this fiscal stimulus. So, you know, we get Trump elected here in November, and business looks at what he was saying during the election, you know, which was we're going to stimulate the economy with $1 trillion infrastructure spending proposal here, and we're going to deregulate business massively, right? And that deregulation plus the fiscal stimulus is going to give a big boost to the economy. Well, that, you know, released the animal spirits of business investors. Okay, it's coming. So they started plowing more money into the stock market in those industries and companies that would benefit most from infrastructure spending and the tax cuts, right? Trump promised not only infrastructure spending, but massive tax cuts of $6 trillion plus and massive deregulation. Well, what does all this represent? The big tax cuts and deregulation is about cutting corporate costs, isn't it? I.e., that's a kind of government subsidization of profits. Once again, you could subsidize profits by lowering interest rates, during the previous period, but now we're shifting to subsidizing profits by cutting taxes and deregulating industries. No, and on top of that, we're going to do infrastructure spending, Trump's election campaign program, and on top of that, we're going to boost defense spending. So it look like a Goldilocks economy for investors was coming with the Trump victory, and of course it was, right? So soon as he won, we get this Trump trade, it was called, and stocks going up, you know, and investors plowing money into those industries on the fiscal side that were going to benefit the most. From the fiscal stimulus, i.e. infrastructure and tax cuts and deregulation. By the way, deregulation not only cuts costs immediately, but it opens up the way for companies to make more profits from non-compliance. So you get two hits from deregulation here. And so what are the industry-by-industry deregulation proposals? Well, of course, at the top of the list was the Obamacare, right? ACA. Big cuts there. Who was going to benefit from the ACA? Well, certainly insurance companies, medical device companies, hospital companies, pharmaceutical companies, and just about all the other companies that now no longer had to provide health insurance, you know, the business mandatory provision there. So, you know, across the board, a lot of real cost reduction. And remember, the ACA, not only if you get rid of it, repeal it, is going to reduce costs, but $600 billion, actually $592 billion, of that Obamacare was tax hikes to pay for it on corporations, businesses, and the wealthy. We talked about that last time, and if you want to read my article on that, it's on my blog, jackrasmus.com. You know, how the tax cuts were really, at the heart of the opposition to the taxes, opposition to ACA all along, right? That's what it was really about. And that's why businesses and professionals and upper-class investors were so opposed to it. All right, so I'm not going to go through those cuts that would occur, but there's about $592 billion of them if they repeal. And those cuts, you know, no matter what happens to the Trump care that comes out of this, which they're still battling right now today, no matter what happens, you're going to see most of those tax cuts contained. And that was part of this industry deregulation in the healthcare sector, right? But then we get big industry deregulation by Trump here. We can see it now in his recently released budget for the Environmental Protection Agency. Well, who is that going to financially benefit? Well, the oil, chemical, gas companies, but also transport companies, auto companies and emissions, railroads, trucking, right? Pipeline companies, utility companies, because they've scrapped by executive order the very important EPA limits on industrial emissions of metals by these utility companies, you know, in their heating plants, right? Okay, so EPA cuts, you know, big cost cuts. Dodd-Frank, you know, we're going to repeal the rest of that, right? Banks and financial companies are going to benefit, bottom line. And antitrust, to the extent it exists, you know, is now put to rest for good, rest in peace, antitrust. And you can see more mergers and acquisitions, and therefore more speculative profits from merging and acquiring companies, you know, big pharma companies, telecom companies, and so forth. So all this industry-by-industry deregulation is only beginning, and Obamacare and the ACA repeal is just the beginning of it. And that's going to raise the profits. You know, the profit margins of all these companies in these industries I mentioned through this deregulation, right? And again, not only cutting the cost of doing paperwork, right, but releasing them go and make more profits, more sales, from the fact they don't have to go along with regulations. In other words, open the door, right? A good example is the pipeline company. So now they can build all these pipelines, and it's not just a question of paperwork for them. It's a question of revenue for them. And they're going to get a benefit from both angles with the cost reduction here from deregulation. So business investors were expecting all this, right, back in November, the fiscal stimulus, more infrastructure spending, more tax cuts, more deregulation, and they were buying up stocks that they anticipated would be more profitable as a result. But it's really the same program. See, you see, it's profit margins driving profits. In other words, costs per sales, profit margins. It's not really selling more stuff in which you would have to produce more, in which you would then have to hire more people and pay them wages. You know, it's really cutting costs, driving profits here in the U.S. we're talking about. Right. The low interest rates for 8 years, you know, boosted profits from lower cost of borrowing and from bond issuing, you know, corporate bonds, both junk bonds and investment grade bonds, right, and led to borrowing for stock purchases, portfolio profits, capital gains, profits from financial capital gains, right. That was the game for the previous 8 years. Now the anticipated game is a fiscal side approach to all this, subsidizing profits by reducing costs and so forth, right? That was the realization that, we got a whole new strategy here of tax cuts, infrastructure spending, accelerated defense spending, and deregulation, right? To boost profits, so those companies that are going to benefit, let's buy their stocks, and the stock market drove up, right? Okay, and that was called the Trump trade, right? Well, the Trump trade's in trouble, because if you can't, the Republicans, Trump and Ryan, you know, that's what the whole repeal, the Trump care is all about. It's really Trump-Ryan health care. Right? If you can't deliver on that, even, it seemed the Republicans were so overwhelmingly in agreement on, repeal Obamacare. If you can't deliver that, investors are saying, well, gee, are you going to be able to deliver the big corporate tax cuts you're saying that are coming? Are you going to be able to deliver, the infrastructure spending that you say you're going to do, the $1 trillion in infrastructure spending and the $6.2 trillion in tax cuts that, you know, Trump is saying he's going to do? $1 trillion in infrastructure, $6 trillion in tax cuts. If you can't deliver what we thought was your, easiest piece of legislation here, can you deliver the rest? They're saying this is what business is saying to itself now. Right? I mean, what about Dodd-Frank? Can you deliver Dodd-Frank? You know, if you can't deliver ACA, maybe we threw all this money into the stock market prematurely. And what did we see this past week? Stock market really took a dive, didn't it? Because it looked as if the ACA bill was in trouble, which it is. They'll work out a compromise. Stock market took a dive. Investors say, there's a problem here. And if you can't deliver that, maybe you can't deliver all the rest of it. Maybe, pumping up all this money, let's hold off. And some of them got too scared and pulled their money out. A lot of them are still in the market, waiting to see what the outcome is. If you look at the stock movements the last 3 days of this week, there's sort of nothing's happening, It's like everybody just sort of marking time, waiting to see what really happens with this bill. And if the bill, ACA repeal, Trump Care turns out to be, minor tweaks to the whole thing, to Obamacare. You know, then investors are going to conclude that, well, maybe we're only going to get minor changes in the tax bill, tax cut bill, and maybe we're only get minor changes, you know, in Dodd-Frank and some of the other bills. So we better just, you know, hold our fire for a while and see how this thing shakes out. So some are running to for the exits, and we saw that in the collapse. So 100 points here one day, but the rest are now watching, you see, waiting for the other foot to fall here. What's going to happen with all this fiscal stimulus shift, this major shift, the fiscal side, tax cuts and spending, in order to boost profits and therefore stock prices? Let's look at what this tax cut side of this fiscal policy amounts to, right? Don't forget, let's start with the fact that the ACA repeal is $592 billion of tax cuts. All right, well, coming right behind that is the real Ryan tax cut bill, which coincides nicely with Trump's promise of $6.2 trillion over a decade. Right, you know, that's like $600 billion a year. That's huge, right? Okay, what's he talking about? Well, reducing the top corporate tax rate to 20%, you know, cutting it in half, right? And he's not saying anything about loopholes, closing all these loopholes, you know, that benefit investors and corporations. No, you know, we don't know what's going to happen there. Right now, it just looks like, having corporate top tax rates, right? Probably reducing the capital gains tax, which is already fairly low, 20-25%. Probably reduce that to about 5%. We'll see. Eliminating what's called the territorial tax, which benefits U.S. multinational companies. You know, the foreign profits tax, which they don't enforce. And tax inversions and stuff like that, where big corporations move their money offshore and keep it there so they don't have to bring it back and pay taxes, you know. And they're going to eliminate that, eliminate corporations paying any taxes on their foreign profits to the U.S. government. Well, that's just going to be an incentive for corporations to move their operations out of the U.S. even more than they have. You know, Trump talks about, oh, he's going to do free trade and, revise free trade and bring the jobs back. Well, at the same time, he's proposing tax cuts that will encourage and incent corporations, U.S., to move offshore to avoid paying any taxes whatsoever. Yeah, that's the territorial tax. They say, oh, you know, U.S. corporations pay two taxes. They got to pay it on their foreign income and pay it on their domestic earnings as well. You know, that's not fair. You're taxing them twice. No, you're not taxing them twice. And that, oh, the U.S. tax rate is the highest rate in the world. The nominal tax rate for the U.S. is higher than some of the U.S. capitalist competitor countries. Yes, it is higher, but the nominal tax rate is not what counts. What counts is the effective tax rate. Now, what do these corporations really pay? Not what the rate says they should pay. In other words, what do they pay after all their loopholes and deductions and so forth? Well, the U.S. tax code is full of loopholes and deductions for these big corporations. They hardly pay anything now, right? Already. And there's no talk of, well, what are you going to close? You know, if you're going to lower the tax rate, you're going to give them even more. What loopholes are you going to close? Well, Trump's not saying much about that, right? Which means it probably keeps them on top of it. So this territorial tax, you know, eliminate all taxes on all profits, will amount to about a $2 trillion windfall for multinational corporations, because that's really what U.S. corporations are holding offshore. A good example is Apple. Right? Apple has over $220 billion, I think, in cash. It's holding it in cash. 90% of that is held in its offshore subsidiary, so it doesn't have to pay taxes on it. So eliminating territorial tax, you know, is going to be a big boon to Apple and the tech companies and the pharma companies and the banks and all those companies that are really doing a lot of business offshore, you see. All right. This occurred back in the Bush days. In 2005, U.S. corporations in the same groupings I mentioned were keeping about $700-800 billion at that time in offshore subsidiaries to avoid paying tax. Right. So the Congress, Democrats and Republicans, said, okay, instead of paying the 39% tax rate on 36% U.S. corporate taxes, instead of paying that, just bring the money back, folks, and we'll charge you only 5.25%. But you got to promise when you bring the money back, you're going to expend it to expand here in the U.S., which will create jobs. Well, they brought the money back, most of it, right? But they didn't use it to create jobs or expand business in the U.S. They gave it to the stock shareholders. You know, they just returned it to the shareholders. A windfall. Yeah. And that's the game going on with this territorial tax nonsense. Repatriation, you see. You get to bring it back now without paying anything, right? If we get rid of territorial tax. You know, in recent years, proposals have been to repeat the Bush deal and bring back and pay only 10% or 8% and so forth. Well, the territorial tax means we're going to wipe it out altogether. And there's going to be big tax cuts here, you know, in the fiscal bill of Trump, providing advantages to commercial property investors, you know. I mean, hotels, something to do with Mr. Trump. I wonder how much his company is going to benefit from these exemptions and deductions and deals on the construction, commercial construction side. You know, I'm talking about industrial plants and hotels and resorts and office buildings and malls and so forth. That's commercial property. And that's what a lot of his infrastructure spending is going to be about. And he's going to have to give tax cuts as well here, tax credits for people to buy Trump care insurance, right? So, you know, we're looking at trillions of dollars here. He says $6.2 trillion. Let's put this $6.2 trillion in historical perspective a little here. How much tax cut did Bush give? Well, in his first term, $3.4 trillion, 80% went to the top 20% and investors in particular, $3.4 trillion in a series of tax cuts. And then, you know, another $500 to $700 billion in this repatriation tax boondoggle in 2005. Another $300 billion or so in other industry-specific tax cuts, energy industry and so forth. And then when the crisis hit in 2008, an immediate tax rebate of $180 billion. So that's over $4 trillion, well over $4 trillion. You know, about $4.6 trillion, maybe, of tax cuts under Bush. Under Bush. All right. No wonder the government debt, the total federal government debt, went from $4 trillion to $9 trillion under his watch. Right. Well, that's about the value of those tax cuts, isn't it? Right. Yeah. People think that, you know, the government debt is because of spending. No, no. It's 60% at least minimum is due to declining tax revenues. Yes. It's mostly tax cuts and slow economy not producing tax revenues that's responsible for this debt that we got. Of course, you know, when the bailout came, money was thrown at that, a couple trillion dollars. So that's part of the cost as well, the debt. You know, you know, most of that went to corporations and the bankers. All right, so $4.6 trillion tax cuts under Bush. What about under Obama? Well, he comes into office 2009. His initial stimulus bill has $300 billion in tax cuts. Then he quickly, between 2010 and 12, extended the Bush tax cuts we were talking about to the tune of $450 billion a year. So that's another $900 billion on top of the $300 billion. And then in 2012, at the end of 2012, there was this fiscal cliff nonsense bullshit deal in which Obama and the Democrats agreed to extend the Bush tax cuts for another 10 years, and that cost $5 trillion. Yeah, $5 trillion. He just rolled over, Obama did, and gave them $5 trillion, you know, continued the Bush tax cuts, right? So we get a total of $6 trillion, $6.2 trillion as well from Obama. So Trump is only proposing what Obama delivered. You know, he's doubling down. He's going to give another $6.2 trillion. So did Obama. At the same time, you know, Obama agrees to take back in fiscal spending austerity programs in 2011 and 2013, it was about $2 trillion, you know, $1 trillion in spending cuts in August 2011, and then what was called the sequester, another $1.5 trillion, half of it social spending, half of it defense spending. Well, you know, Congress and Democrats and Obama went along with, okay, we're going to suspend the cuts. Half of that $1.5 trillion was supposed to be defense spending. We're going to suspend that, but we're going to go through with let the social spending cuts go through. Okay, so we got nearly $1.75 trillion in social program spending cuts agreed to by Democrats and Republicans, and $6.2 trillion in tax cuts, 80% of which go to corporations and investors. Okay, so you know, $6.2 trillion for them, and take away $1.75 trillion from us. That was Obama's fiscal program. Very much like Trump's proposing. Not that much different. So you add up, the big tax cuts here under Bush, $4.6 trillion, $6 trillion more under Obama, another $6 trillion coming under Trump. What do you got there? That's like $16, $17 trillion in tax cuts between 2001 and 2026. A quarter century of $17 trillion in tax cuts. All right. And then they talk about, oh, the deficits and the national debt. Well, there you go, folks. That's it. Right? It's not rocket science. Just add up the numbers. It's obvious why you got this debt. Ah, but they're so clever. They turn the debt on, all these single moms and elderly folks and people on disability, you know, that are getting Medicaid. You know, they're the folks that are responsible for this great debt and deficit we got. No, it's all the handouts. It's the welfare. It's the handouts going to corporations and investors through these tax cuts. That's the problem. You know? And we're going to have more of that. More of that's coming. Trump infrastructure, $1 trillion. Will it create jobs? No, won't. I'll tell you why. Right? First of all, a lot of this is going to be tax cuts for corporations. Again, we're going to have embedded tax cuts here that are going to be claimed to stimulate infrastructure spending. Okay, first. Secondly, right, it's going to be a lot of this is going to be what's called public-private partnerships. In construction, in the commercial property construction. Oh, that's, Mr. Trump's backyard, isn't it, right? Well, what do those look like? Well, a good example of what's going on in L.A., right? You get in these partnerships, you get the developers, they call them developers, you know. You get these developers, builders, to build a whole new municipal city center, government city center in L.A., right? And the city doesn't put out any money initially for this. You know, they build this, quote, for free, and then they arrange the city tax code so that the cost of building this comes out of the tax take, so no initial payout. You know, politicians get nice new buildings, right, and no initial cost to them, and it's amortized over, 20, 30 years out of, taxes and fees, and, they raise taxes and fees to pay for it. But the big boondoggle is these developers get to keep the properties, downtown L.A., very, very expensive properties that the old municipal buildings sat on and still do, to do with what they want. Yeah, that's where they're really going to make their killing. You know, they're going to redevelop, tear down that stuff, redevelop it, and sell, you know, maybe make more Trump hotels. Who knows, right? That's the kind of private-public partnership boondoggles that are coming with this infrastructure spending, right? Now, it's not going to create as many jobs, too, because infrastructure spending increase, if it's significant, will stimulate the Fed to raise interest rates even more. Right, and interest rates will offset, you know, the fiscal stimulus in properties construction to some degree. Right, and we already see rising rates in the Fed, and long-term rates, mortgage rates, prime rates are already rising. Right, and we're going to see two or three more Fed hikes here in rates in 2017. Who knows what 2018 is going to be? Well, that's going to slow down certain sectors of construction, while you know, Trump is boosting his public-private infrastructure, you know. So part of that boom is going to be offset here, right? Now, rate increases, there's another effect. Rate increases, interest rate increases by the Fed, have the effect of raising the value of the dollar. Well, if you raise the value of the dollar, you make U.S. exports, manufacturing exports, less competitive. So you're reducing U.S. export production and therefore slowing down manufacturing. And that slowdown manufacturing means less jobs in manufacturing. And, of course, raising rates, autos are very sensitive to rate increases. You're going to slow down the auto industry, which is already peaked and struggling and churning, trying to keep going. So it's going to be very sensitive to any rate hikes going on here, and the rate hikes are going up, you know, and there's over, what, $1.3 trillion in auto loans out there now? Incredible, even more than student loans, auto loans. People are buying autos, but they're buying it because of, you know, the low rates and the deals on, you know, the average time of financing an auto now is like 72 months. You know, not too long ago, it used to be 36. Now the average is 72, 6 years. People are paying for these cars for 6 years, you know. Infrastructure spending is also more long-term spending. These are capital construction projects. They take longer to get going. You know, if they pass a bill by the end of the year on infrastructure, let's assume, right, it's going to take about 18 months before you start creating any real jobs as a result of it. And the jobs tend to be very capital labor substitution, long-term effect jobs. In other words, a lot of capital, you know, equipment and so forth is used more than hiring of labor. Okay, so the initial construction, you got some labor there, but that won't happen for 18 months. Some construction workers will be put to work, but once it's built, those jobs disappear, you see. It's like one-time hit. And, of course, Trump is counting on that, you know, before the end of his term. And there's a time delay, as I said, 18 months, right? Also, there's a big question. If the tax cut bill, this big, massive tax cut bill, comes before the infrastructure bill, which it will, right, to the extent you get a big tax cut, you're going to cut the, you know, you raise the deficit and the debt, and therefore that will be a big pressure against any kind of real infrastructure spending. You're not going to get $1 trillion infrastructure spending. You're lucky you get a token program out of this, right? So all this talk about infrastructure spending and boosting jobs, I just don't believe it, right? Nor do I believe that all this talk about he's going to bring jobs back to the U.S. from free trade, right? He's going to renegotiate free trade deals and force U.S. companies to build jobs in the U.S. I don't believe that's going to have much effect either. I don't think he's going to be even allowed to do something significant about free trade. There are signs he's already backtracking on that. And, by the way, that takes years to renegotiate. you know, trade relationships. I mean, look what's going on in Britain, in the UK. You know, they voted a year ago, Brexit, to leave the UK, and they have to renegotiate the trade relationships, and they haven't even begun. It's 1 year later, and they haven't even begun. It's going to take them another 2 years. It takes, like, at minimum 3 years to renegotiate these trade deals. And trade has been responsible, free trade, for about a third of the job loss in the U.S. The other third has been due to automation, which has been stimulated by tax cuts for replacing labor with capital. You know, the effect on job loss has been about the same. But economists today aren't paying enough attention, I don't believe, to what's going on in the labor market and the destruction of jobs, in addition to free trade and automation. And that's, you know, this shift to part-time, temp, and independent contract, gig jobs. So we have these three forces that are hammering jobs, and to the extent creating any jobs, they're low-paid jobs, right? And that's why wages are stagnating. And if wages stagnate, consumers don't buy goods as much. And if they don't buy goods as much, businesses turn to financial investing and turn to offshore. You see, it's a vicious cycle going on. Well, you know, investors realized here that all this profit subsidy 2 through fiscal policy, you know, subsidy 1 was monetary policy now going, you know, by ACA, repealing ACA, tax cuts, infrastructure, and so forth, may not happen. So this big Trump trade stock bubble has stopped in its tracks as a result. And investors are waiting to see whether the Trump trade has faded or not. Stocks last week had their worst day in this collapse since September 2016. Who were affected? Well, mostly the companies that would have benefited from infrastructure, the banks, the healthcare companies, right? All right, so everything's on hold. You're waiting to see. And has there been a bubble? You know, even before the Trump trade? Oh, yes, there has, right? U.S. stocks now account for over 40% of the value of all global stocks. The U.S. accounts for 25% of real GDP in the world, but its stock markets are even more lucrative than its regular economy. Right? Price-sales ratios in stocks are at record levels. Right? They're twice what they were in 2009. Merrill Lynch, Bank of America Merrill Lynch Research, says that stocks are now the most overvalued since 2000. We know what happened in 2001, dot-com bust, right? And then there's this economist, respected economist, Shiller, who has this index called the CAPE, C-A-P-E index, which predicts stock booms and busts. And he says the S&P market is now selling at 29 times earnings. 29 times earnings. The 10-year average for CAPE and earnings, stock per earnings, was 16 times, right? In other words, stocks were 16 times the value of earnings to corporations. Well, now they're 29 times. And that was almost two times double, excuse me, what their historical average has been over decades, right? It's doubled. This is a red light, flashing red light. Right? 34% of all fund managers say stocks are overvalued, the highest percent saying that in 20 years, right? And the CAPE is at record high now in 2017. Is there a bubble? Damn right there's a bubble. You know, and this Trump trade has just added one more level to that bubble, and it cannot be sustained. And if Trump does not deliver on the tax cuts, on the infrastructure spending, on the deregulation, you know, led by Obamacare repeal, you know, Dodd-Frank, EPA, you know, all these others, antitrust, mergers, acquisitions, etc. If it doesn't deliver on that, watch that stock market retreat big time. Yes, we are on the verge of another bubble here that could go bust this year. It all depends what happens in Congress and what happens with this legislation and whether business investors think the legislation is going to set in motion this whole new strategy for another 8 years of profit subsidization by fiscal policy, tax cuts, infrastructure, and so on and so forth, right? Deregulation. That's what they're betting on. And they're not so sure they made the right bet yet. So they're pulling back and watching and waiting. And the stock market will be a good indicator. We could be looking at another 2001.com crash here. Who knows when? You know, I can't predict exactly when. It all depends what these outcomes will be over the next year. But certainly, if the Trump trade... if Trump does not deliver, then the Trump trade in the stock market will fade. The Trump trade will fade. Okay, so we'll be watching that. Next week, by the way, join me. We have a special show. I'm going to have some union labor local level activists on the show. We're going to talk about what's going on at the local union level. A lot of discontent with the Democratic Party. Right. We'll have these folks who are in, you know, in the bushes down there where the rubber meets the road and talk with us about the discontent that's rising as the Democratic Party appears unable to stop Trump. We'll see whether they can. Long shot. But folks, you know, who... basically, in labor that supported the Democrats are having big second doubts now, and we see that even at the higher level, you know, the union heads are playing games, trying to maneuver with Trump, and we saw what the working class and others did in the Midwest in the vote. All signs that the breaks are coming here. Okay, so we'll pick all that up next week here. Come, make sure you tune into the show where we'll talk about will labor break with the Democratic Party? Okay, that's Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Sid Wilson, the robber burns, straight to hell, the greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets of screaming.